Dish Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines this hour. Iran slaps sanctions on nearly two dozen entities and individuals affiliated with the European Union for backing and inciting terror and chaos in the country. Palestine calls on the International Criminal Court to probe the Israeli crimes amid anger over the latest raids in the occupied West Bank that left six Palestinians dead. In the U.S., Japan and South Korea warn of an unprecedented response if North Korea conducts a much-speculated nuclear test. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Terrorists have carried out a deadly attack on a holy shrine in the south-central Iranian city of Shiraz. According to the provincial officials, at least 15 people, including two children, have been killed and dozens more injured in the attack, which occurred at the Shah Charagh Shrine. That's a popular pilgrimage site. Judicial sources say three gunmen opened fire outside of the shrine and then were able to infiltrate the compound randomly, shooting on the pilgrims. Sources also say two of the terrorists have been detained, while efforts are underway to detain the third one. The identity of the terrorists and their affiliations remain unclear. Iran has slapped sanctions on nearly two dozen European Union entities and individuals for supporting terror activities during the recent riots in the country. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said that those blacklisted include eight institutions and 12 individuals. He said the bans are imposed in response to the EU's unconstructive measures against the Islamic Republic. Amir Abdollahian said the targeted entities and individuals were found supporting and inciting terror, extremism, and violence in Iran. The top diplomat once again warned the EU against pursuing his failed and well-torn approach toward Iran. He made the remarks during a meeting with his Belarusian counterpart in Tehran. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says the rise in U.S. hostility toward his country is due to the growing power of the Islamic Republic. Raisi made the remarks during a meeting with the visiting Belarusian Foreign Minister, Vladimir Makey. He noted that the sanctions imposed on Iran have not and will never stop the country's progress. He added the expansion of ties between independent nations is one of the ways to neutralize such sanctions. The president also stressed the need to accelerate the implementation of agreements signed between Tehran and Minsk. He said joint economic meetings between the two countries are signs of the two countries' determination to boost bilateral ties. McKay, for his part, expressed his country's willingness to implement the deals and to strengthen relations with Tehran. Ukraine and its Western allies have repeatedly claimed that Russia is using Iranian-made drones in the war without providing any evidence. Tehran and Moscow have been quick to reject the allegations. This is while the U.S. and its European allies have been fanning the flames of war by providing Kiev with weapons since the onset of the conflict.
Tehran has once again rejected baseless accusations about Iranian-made drones being used in the Ukraine war. The Islamic Republic's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, has clearly stated that Tehran would not remain indifferent if it is proven that Iranian drones are being used in the war in Ukraine against people. The top Iranian diplomat had previously stated that Tehran and Moscow have defensive cooperation, saying it's not Iran's policy to provide Russia with weapons and drones to be used in Ukraine. Tehran has time and again clearly stated its opposition to war and any escalation of conflict, urging self-restraint on both sides. Iranian officials say the allegations leveled against the country stem from an ongoing Western campaign to pressure the Islamic Republic. Russian officials have echoed similar remarks.
Everything that is now being done on the Iranian track is subordinated to one goal, pressure on this country. And Washington is mobilizing NATO and EU countries for this in support of its position.
Also, the US, EU, and UK have moved to impose sanctions on Iran over the baseless accusations, supporting the notion that the West only wants to put more pressure on Iran. Meanwhile, Britain, France, and Germany have called on the UN to investigate the allegation. But Iran's ambassador to the UN has described the possible probe as illegal within the framework of Resolution 2231. In a letter to the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antony Guterres, Amir Saeedi Ravani argued that the UN arms embargo on Iran mentioned in the resolution has expired in 2020, saying this means no Iranian sale or transfer of weapons or related materials to other countries is ever since subject to the resolution. The Iranian diplomat also urged the international body not to act based on the anti-Iran allegations by Western countries. Meanwhile, Russia had described the claims by the Western states as conspiracy theories, warning the UN against conducting a probe into such allegations.
No arms transfers in violation of Resolution 2231 have been ever conducted by Iran, and no drones were supplied by Iran to Russia for the use in the conflict in Ukraine.
Moscow has warned that it would reassess its cooperation with the world body if it carries out an investigation into the origins of the drones.
Some Western countries have imposed sanctions on the Islamic Republic under the pretext that it's supplying drones and other weapons to Russia. However, Tehran says the adopted measures are based on misinformation, announcing its preparation to hold dialogue with Ukraine towards the nullification of the allegations. Still, Kiev and its allies refrain from providing evidence to back up their claims or holding talks with Tehran.
Tehran has dismissed accusations by some Western countries and their media outlets that it provided weapons, including drones, to Russia for deployment against Ukraine. Iran's foreign ministry has called the allegations unfounded and made on the basis of misinformation and ill-intentioned presumptions. The anti-Iran claims first emerged in July, with U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan alleging that Washington had received information indicating that the Islamic Republic was preparing to provide Russia with up to several hundred drones, including weapons-capable UAVs, on an expedited timeline for use in the war in Ukraine. However, the Pentagon said it could not confirm the transfer of any Iranian weaponry to Russia. Since the very beginning, Iran rejected the claims, with the country's foreign ministry stating Tehran's preparedness to hold dialogue with Ukraine towards nullification of the allegations. Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has even proposed a joint meeting between Iranian and Ukrainian military personnel and experts to review battlefield evidence of Iranian drones used by Russia in Ukraine. Despite that, Kyiv and its allies repeated the baseless American narrative without providing any evidence. The US, EU, and UK imposed sanctions against the country. So, if Kyiv and the West are so sure, then why are they reluctant to provide detailed evidence that supports their claims? Plus, while Iran has managed to advance its defensive capabilities despite U.S. sanctions, is Washington using Ukraine as a false pretext to bring the Europeans along in a bid to impose an arms embargo against Iran to hamper the country's progress in the defense sector?
The Palestinian Foreign Ministry is calling on the International Criminal Court to probe the Israeli crimes in the occupied territories. The ministry has condemned continued deadly aggression against Palestinians. Also, Iran and Jordan have separately denounced Israeli raids across the occupied territories, calling on the international community to protect Palestinians. Meanwhile, the European Union has expressed its regret over the latest killings in the West Bank, but stopped short of condemning the regime's crimes. The Israeli military raids on Nablus and Ramallah left 6 Palestinians dead overnight on Tuesday.
Thousands of mourners took to the streets of Nablus in the occupied West Bank to bid farewell to Palestinians killed by Israeli forces. early Tuesday. Clashes broke out between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces after regime forces conducted a raid in Nablus. Several Palestinians were killed in the raid. Among the victims was Wadi Hawah, a fighter for the newly formed resistance group Lion's Den. 21 other Palestinians were also wounded in the attack, some of them in critical condition.
Those Palestinian young men will not be defeated by the Israeli war machinery. The Israeli occupation will pay a high price for its crimes. The response will be in the field. The flag of Wadi Hawa and other martyrs will continue flying every day, and more Palestinian heroes will be born.
The Israeli army said it had carried out a vast operation with police and intelligence officers targeting a site used by the main operatives of the Lion's Den, describing it as a headquarters and a workshop for making weapons. Later on Tuesday, regime forces conducted another attack near Ramallah and killed one more Palestinian man. 19-year-old Qusay At-Tamimi was killed during a confrontation in the village of Nabi Saleh. Palestinian officials have condemned the raids as vicious and criminal, but they said such attacks will not break the will of the Palestinian people, who are adherent to resistance as their legitimate right.
Their attacks on Palestinians in Nablus and in Ramallah and in other places will not break the Palestinian will. It will not stop the Palestinian resistance. The Palestinians have understood very clearly that Israel understands only the language of force, and that's why they are ready to defend themselves and defend their rights.
All the Palestinians are in the same tunnel, facing the same atrocities, while the same war crimes are being committed all over the Palestinian territories. The Palestinians are unified through different forms of resistance.
Since the beginning of this year, over 130 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
The Israeli regime threatens to continue killing Palestinian resistance fighters under the pretext of battling terrorism. Palestinians, however, say they will remain steadfast in their resolve, stressing that the Israeli atrocities will not stop their resistance. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
The Yemeni government has promised to bring an end to decades of looting and plundering of the nation's natural resources by countries like Saudi Arabia and the UAE. That comes in light of Yemen's military strength to stop the exploitation of its resources. Our Sana'a correspondent Yusuf Mari has more.
Yemen's Ansarullah movement is doubling down on its threats to target foreign cargo ships attempting to enter Yemeni waters illegally to steal oil and other natural resources. This after the government recently fired warning shots toward a Greek oil ship attempting to illegally load an estimated 2 million barrels of Yemeni oil from a port terminal in the province of Hadramaut. The warning shots forced the Greek cargo ship to abandon its mission and use its own fuel to head back home empty-handed.
This fuel ship was attempting to steal 2 million barrels of Yemeni oil worth millions of dollars. This money is supposed to be allocated to the Central Bank of Yemen, which would then be distributed to pay labor salaries across the country. Unfortunately, this money was transferred to a bank belonging to the Saudi royal family and was used to fund the American-Saudi aggression on Yemen.
According to the government in Sana'a, ending years of plundering and looting of the Yemeni natural wealth is essential to stimulate the Yemeni economy. It also pulls Yemen out of the decades of poverty and economic instability, which has already left millions of Yemenis in poverty. An initiative, the Sana'a government says, is promising to make it a reality. Observers believe that the world now needs to recognize that it is dealing with a new Yemeni nation, one that will never compromise its dignity and sovereignty.
The new identity of Yemen is because people's demands are now being met, whereby the Yemeni people are finally getting what they deserve as they reap the benefit of their natural resources, which used to be exploited and plundered. The latest warning shots we sent are an example of the military and political leadership's strengths, pose, and determination to protect the people of Yemen.
Yemen has for decades been described as the poorest country in the Middle East. However, the underlying reasons why that is the case are hardly ever discussed. According to experts we spoke with, one of the main reasons is the systematic exploitation of Yemen's natural wealth by the UAE and Saudi Arabia.
With the latest developments, foreign countries and companies who have a history in plundering Yemen's natural resources will have to think twice about entering the country's waters illegally, as the Ansarullah movement has made it very clear it will not hesitate to use decisive military force to protect what it calls the Yemeni people's wealth. Yusuf Mawardi, Sana'a.
The West, Japan, and South Korea are promising an unprecedented response if North Korea decides to go ahead with a much-speculated nuclear test. Deputy foreign ministers of the three countries held a news conference after the talks in Tokyo. South Korea's Cho Hyun-dong warned of an unparalleled scale of response, while his U.S. counterpart Wendy Sherman urged Pyongyang to refrain from provocations that destabilize the region. And Japan's representative referred to the three nations' resolve to deepen cooperation. They believe North Korea is preparing to conduct its seventh nuclear bomb testing. Also on Wednesday, thousands of South Korean Marines staged amphibious landing drills. The exercises are part of a larger 12-day war games, some of which are conducted jointly with the U.S. Pyongyang sees the war games as an existential threat. Russia has once again accused Ukraine of planning to use the so-called dirty bomb in its own territory. The latest accusation comes from President Vladimir Putin amid rising tensions between Russia and the West over Ukraine. In a meeting with intelligence chiefs of several former Soviet countries, Putin warned that the risk of conflict in the world and the region is high. He called for higher security measures around key infrastructure sites. In the meantime, the Kremlin says Moscow will continue to convince the international community that Ukraine intends to detonate a bomb laced with radioactive contaminants. Russia has already submitted a letter to the UN Security Council on this issue. Kiev, however, denies such allegations. Also earlier, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg reaffirmed Ukraine's claims.
Russia now falsely claims Ukraine is preparing to use a radiological dirty bomb on its own territory. NATO allies reject this transparently false allegation. Russia often accuses others for what they intend to do themselves. We have seen this pattern before, from Syria to Ukraine. Russia must not use false pretexts for further escalation. The world is watching closely.
The NATO chief said the Russian president's nuclear rhetoric is dangerous and irresponsible. He noted that Russia must understand that it should never use a nuclear weapon in Ukraine. The U.S. President Joe Biden has also warned that Moscow would be making an incredibly serious mistake if it used a tactical nuclear weapon. Kremlin calls such claims part of a campaign by the West aimed at undermining confidence in Moscow. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we have reached this part of the Kumail supplication. In this part, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, says, أَفَتُرَاكَ سُبْحَانَكَ يَا إِلَهِ وَبِحَمْدِكَ. Can't you see yourself? Glory be to you, my Allah. Yours is the praise. تَسْمَعُ فِيهَا صَوْتَ عَبْدٍ مُسْلِمٍ سُجِنَ فِيهَا بِمُخَالَفَتِ. Hearing within the fire of hell the voice of a slave surrendered to you and imprisoned there because of his violations. وَذَاقَ طَعْمَ عَذَابِهَا بِمَعْصِيَتِهِ. He is suffering the pangs of its torment because of his disobedience. وَحُبِسَ بَيْنَ أَطْبَاقِهَا بِجُرْمِهِ وَجَرِيمَتِهِ. He is confined within its levels because of his sin and crime. وَهُوَ يَضِجُّ إِلَيْكَ ضَجِيجَ مُؤَمِّلٍ لِرَحْمَتِكَ. Yet he is lamenting before you with the lament of the one hopeful for your mercy. We have sufficiently discussed the concept of staying hopeful of the Almighty Allah and entertaining a good opinion of Him, that husnul dhan that a true believer must have if he wants the Almighty Allah to add him to his ocean of salvation, if he wants to be close to the station of mercy Almighty Allah describes. Now, about the role that sins play in our lives and we are not aware of, we said that sometimes there are some sins that withhold our prayers, but we are not aware. As mentioned earlier, the alienation of the heart from Allah the Exalted is among those direct effects of sin on man. If the heart is disconnected from Allah, it will neither receive the guidance from Him subhanahu wa ta'ala nor give it out. And supplication is one of the things which man raises to Allah, and that is why we say that supplication is ascending Quran, because this is what man raises to Allah after receiving the descending Quran from Him. So if a person is detached from this, then he would undoubtedly be detached from that ascending Quran as well. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, says, sins hinders response and ijabah. A man once asked Imam Ali alayhi salam about this verse, call me and I will answer you, ud'uni astajib lakum, saying, what has happened to us that we pray but we're not answered? And he alayhi salam replied, which of your prayers do you expect to be answered when you have closed its doors and ways? So be wary of Allah. Reform your deeds and purify your hearts. Bid the good and forbid the wrong. And thus Allah shall answer your prayers.
My Lord, glory and praise be to you. Would you disregard the voice of a Muslim slave imprisoned in hell for his disobedience and imprisoned within its pits for his evil doings and misdeeds, crying out to you the cries of one who has faith in your mercy, and calling out to you in the language of those who believe in your unity and seeking to approach you by means of your epithet.
Thank you, Allah,
now that we're here,
feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So there are many conditions, many shurut, better say, requisites that we must be aware of while we try to raise our supplications to Almighty Allah. And this part of the Kumail supplication is mentioning two important concepts about that. First, لَجِيجَ مُؤَمِّلٍ لِرَحْمَتِكَ. You must stay hopeful of the Almighty Allah's mercy. And second is the fact that you need to be aware that your sins are the very reason why you are entangled in this world. Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is narrated to have said, "And the sin which causes prayer to be rejected and the skies to turn dark is disobedience to the parents." According to another tradition, the sins that lead to the rejection of prayer are bad intention, impure heart, hypocrisy, despairing of the response from Allah, and this is exactly the opposite side of مُؤَمِّلٍ لِرَحْمَتِكَ. Anyway, delaying the obligatory prayers until the lapse of their prescribed time, to neglect attaining proximity to Allah through good deeds and charity, and employing foul and obscene language. This is only part of those sins that reject our prayers. Imam Baqir alayhi salam has also said, "It so happens that a person asks Allah for a need, and it is in his power to grant him his need in the near future. But the person commits a sin. So Allah, the Blessed, the Exalted, says to the angels, do not grant his need, deprive him of it, because he has become the subject of my wrath and deserved to be deprived from me." This is what we really need to be aware of if we want to stay hopeful of Almighty Allah's mercy and to be involved in that vast ocean of mercy. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bazaar.
Many people have ideas. However, those who turn their ideas into reality are the ones who search for ways to make their ideas happen. More often than not, this occurs by joining knowledge with method. Knowledge brings competitive advantages and generates sustainable market leadership. Its tools are creativity and innovation, which are all intangible human talents. Never more than now has knowledge been so critical and significant in production and the shift towards a knowledge-based economy.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Ali Reza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we are going to explore the central role science and technology parks play in complementing the knowledge-based production ecosystem. We wanted to see how the government is shifting towards a knowledge-based economy, and plus we wanted to understand why tech parks are so critical to industry development and the national economy. So let's get started. To better understand the country's knowledge-based ecosystem, we visited an event at Semnan Science and Technology Park where we could get some answers. Science and technology parks are where startups and innovative teams can operate in one geographical location. These areas provide diverse services and facilities to companies that fit the criteria. We
were able to catch up with a couple companies that operate out of this park. One of these companies specializes in producing advanced machines used in mining. This company is one of only a handful that has managed to indigenize these previously imported products. Events like the one we visited helped braid together and link companies, investors, and infrastructures with the necessary resources to complete projects. These components all make up the various parts of the knowledge-based ecosystem. But we also wanted to know how science and tech parks operate and why they are attractive to businesses. One of the advantages of these parks is that it's a space where crucial resources are offered. These places are a focal point for serving knowledge-based companies producing advanced, specialized products needed in the domestic market. Science and technology parks also serve as a launching pad toward the international arena. We spoke with a park official who helped shed more light on this issue.
There are four scenarios of which foreign companies could have the opportunity to reside in Samdong Science and Technology Park. Well, the first scenario will be the execution of soft landing programs between the two countries, which gives the foreign companies an opportunity to get familiar with the host country's market. Well, the second scenario will be holding joint events, including joint startup events, fairs, and similar events, which could help them get familiar with each other. And the other scenario, or the third way that a company could have the chance to come to our park, will be to find and carry out joint projects with our companies, and finally sharing the interests. The fourth scenario will be holding joint innovation tours, which gives them, which gives the companies an opportunity to get familiar with how you know innovation ideas are being implemented in other countries.
These parks are essential in filling a gap in the tech innovation ecosystem, providing monetary resources and attracting investments. These establishments also join investors with particular companies and projects. They offer numerous unique services such as facilitating visa processes, offering financial assistance such as soft loans or even special incentives under free trade zones like tax exemptions. And it doesn't stop there. This park offers so much more to investors.
The other solution or the other way that could attract foreign investors will be to define BOT models, which means they have to introduce projects and within the framework of our protocols. And once it is, it has been approved, they can operate the project for a while. This includes mainly long-term projects. Particularly, and I shall have to tell you that Samdong Science and Technology Park is very interested in projects in the fields of artificial intelligence, IT, ICT, IoT, and virtual reality. And we could help these companies. And once they have, once they build it and then operate it, they could transfer it to our park.
Most tech parks are active in the international sphere and collaborate with other domestic tech parks. Furthermore, these areas function as export hubs. Therefore, one of their main activities is boosting and supplying domestic products to this end.
Samdong Science and Technology Park has been very active in international arena. And our president, Dr. Nazari, has put a great focus in this part. And for information, I have to tell you that we have held two prestigious international events at our park. One in our park, last year we did it in March, I think, with the presence of a with the presence of some great companies, a Turkish delegation, some companies from Turkey. And before that, we held a joint event with Paris Technology Park, which was a technology investment meeting, which we had brought another Turkish delegation to that event, and it was one of the first collaborations between science and technology parks of Iran with Paris Technology Park in such a big international event.
Over the years, the government has placed special attention on knowledge-based companies while implementing new approaches to support tech parks and their businesses. Some of these initiatives aim to remove obstacles along the path of development of these companies. Other activities involve giving resources to executive branches to further develop the ecosystem of innovation and technology nationwide. Along these lines, the Vice Presidency for Science and Technology has implemented a series of activities. This includes investing some $1.4 billion towards financial services. The government has also created a strategic technology development headquarters. It is tasked with implementing 400,000 tech projects and 150 commercialization projects. But that's not all. The government has also established 65 innovation centers and dozens more accelerators to support the developing entrepreneurship ecosystem. Currently, there are well over 7,000 knowledge-based companies scattered across the nation. These enterprises offer services and products in numerous industries. Many are active in biotech, computer software, agriculture, food, chemical tech, aircraft maintenance, steel, gas, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals, just to name a few. According to government figures, the knowledge-based ecosystem accounts for more than 3% of the country's gross domestic product. Moreover, the share of knowledge firms in the country's GDP in 2019 exceeded $34 billion and witnessed a 450% growth since then. That's all according to the Vice President for Science and Technology. All right, now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find the stress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out.
Felt, or so-called namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with Felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when DIVA was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of these disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reach the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how, and what. Why is to define the problem, how is the process towards the solution, and what is the final product and prototype. These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space. All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is the phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's this whole thing, we call it desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People and employees put it in on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances and generalizing this idea to the upcoming products with different potentials. Such small-scale products are intended to improve the mental and physical health of users. And finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, the linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this. This company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose this felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So as you could see, it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen.
There is so much more that can be said about the country's knowledge-based production and activities, so before we go, let's look at a couple of developments in this area. Most of us are familiar with vitamin supplements. However, some vitamins need to be injected, which can be a hassle. Now, a knowledge-based company has produced an oral form of one of these vitamins, saving many of us from the pain of sticking needles. This pharmaceutical company has produced the first oral form of a vitamin B complex that was typically only found in an injectable form. This company also operates out of Pardis Science and Technology Park. It is also one of the first and largest knowledge-based companies. It might be interesting to know that this company mainly produces raw materials such as probiotic products needed in the pharma industry. Such productions have saved the country millions on imports so far. Knowledge-based productions are driven by scientific discoveries, and Iranian scientists produce roughly 2% of the world's scientific articles. That's according to the Minister of Science, Research and Technology. Mohammad Ali Zulfigol says Iran, on average, registers around 70,000 scientific articles in international journals each year. He says Iran is now globally ranked 15th for the number of scientific papers it produces. Zulfigol noted the quality ranking of Iranian articles in the top 10 fields like technology and engineering. The minister highlighted that the nation ranks 5th in nanotechnology publications as well. The official further added that those publishing academic articles also work in knowledge-based companies, helping produce quality products in the competitive field. And with that, we come to the end of this segment. You can contact us with your thoughts and comments via email. And don't forget, you can also send us topics you're interested in. Thank you for tuning in and join us next week, same time, for another edition of Bazaar. It's bye for now. Until then.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.